7.
Okay. So contemplation 7 is the second reference to Tonglen from Lama Chupa, or Offering of the Lamas. So here's the second part, which is how to train oneself in the wish for enlightenment itself. Here there are 2 points, how to develop the wish in the form of a prayer, and how to take the vow for the wish in the form of an action. So Michael talked a little bit about this last week, how there's 2 parts of bodhicitta. So here in this reading, they talk about the wish in the form of a prayer. The words from Lama Chupa are giving and taking, which ride upon the wind. Now, if one lets the practice of giving and taking ride upon the wind, it is actually easier to develop the wish for enlightenment. And this is because of the crucial point that the mind and the inner winds travel in tandem. So this part of the Lama Chupa explains in a little bit more detail how you can get, you know, we don't use the breath that much in the Tonglen meditation. It's just when we're breathing the black air or the blackness into a ball at the center of the other person's heart and then breathing it into ourself. But the rest of this reading under guidance of a lama can actually teach you how to more in depth combine this meditation with your breathing practice. And Michael talked a bit about, you know, how the mind and the winds in the subtle body that we have ride in tandem. So if you concentrate on your winds through your breath, that will help get your mind in a certain place. And then if you also use your mind to get your thoughts riding in a certain way, it will help to get your winds, your breath, following along with it. So it's kind of like, you know, using a subtle method and then a subtler method to get to the same point. And, you know, we won't go into any detail actually on that point, but it's a good seed to plant that if you continue to practice Tonglen and you enjoy the practice, then by continuing to do what you've learned through us, you will definitely find teachers that will teach you how to go deeper and talk to you more about that.
Okay. So some of the contemplations are very short. That was one of them. On that point, I did want to talk a little bit about, give a little bit of background on the riding together in tandem with the breath and the thoughts. Okay. But let's take as our reference contemplation 8, 2 lines. Alternate the 2 of giving and taking, let the same ride on the wind. Once again, this is from a Lojong, and we said in the beginning of this class that Tonglen practices fall within the Lojong section of the Lamrim, which is underneath the section on how to gain the wish for bodhicitta. So this is a reference to Tonglen practices from within Tonglen, from within Lojong practices. Lojong means mental training or mind training. It's sometimes how to train the mind to develop goodness, right? And for us, the mind is down here, so how to develop the heart for goodness. And as a Lojong, a lot of the Lojongs are beautiful and in some ways very radical practices because they teach a way of transforming your world in a very radical way. Even though it isn't radical once you get to know it and understand it, it is radical from the outside. It's telling someone, you will get rich by giving away everything you have. You will have everything you want by making sure others have everything they want first. You can ensure your own longevity and your own everlasting life by protecting life and giving other people life. And it's opposite to the way we think. We normally think the way to get the most is to collect the most and gather the most and protect what we have. We think that we have to live a long life, we have to just protect our own life. and all we have to do is look after ourselves, and then we'll have a long life. And that we'll be free of illness if we just take care of ourselves. And the more we expose ourselves to others, the more we're in jeopardy of getting sick and having other illnesses. So it's a radical practice because it's transforming the focus of our attention from ourselves and our self-cherishing, which in the Tonglen meditation we identify as a flame in our heart, right? And we're flipping it 180 degrees and saying, I'm going to cherish somebody else instead of myself. And it's a radical way of thinking. In some cultures, in some places, that's pretty unacceptable, right? We're fortunate to live in a time now in which we have this freedom to speak and act and to study things like this. So originally these Lojong practices were oral transmissions only. They were never put down into scripture and never written down and put into woodblock print because they were so radical. And they were only given to students when they were ready, when they had had a certain amount of training beforehand in order to get these special teachings. Having said that, these aren't secret teachings. These Lojong practices do not require empowerments. They don't require any kind of entering a mandala or any kind of special thing other than your lama saying, okay, you're ready to have these radical teachings now. So out of this, yes, go ahead, Eric.
Finish your sentence and then I'll...
Okay, so out of this radical practice comes the radical practice of Tonglen, which is a meditation. It's almost like a meditative practice of the Lojong where you're actually meditating on taking someone else's pain and giving others what they want. You're destroying your self-cherishing while giving other people what they need. So you can see Tonglen as the meditative and practical aspect of a Lojong or mind training practice.
You keep referring to ancient texts.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is this like old Tibetan Buddhism as opposed to modern day Tibetan Buddhism where they're, the same way Catholicism changed to the modern and it's real screwed up and the original ideas were very profound and deep. Is this similar or do kids who are Tibetan Buddhists in other countries learn this stuff or is this just, like I'm saying, ancient that you're going back and your teacher's saying study the ancient stuff because the modern day stuff screwed up?
It's an interesting question. I'm only partially capable of answering it because I'm learning it from a Western point of view, right? And we're getting what's here in the West and through our lineage. But from what I understand of the monastic tradition, even as it's practiced today by young monks in India, in this same lineage, it's the Tibetan lineage, they get the ancient texts. The foundation for all of the monastic textbooks hasn't changed. They've tried to keep a thread of continuity as they were prior to the invasion of Tibet and then all the monasteries having to be reestablished in India. And all before that, each of the monasteries had their textbook writers, and they would all base their writings and based on sources within their lineage. In our lineage, within the Gelug lineage, we have our scriptural references, right? Going back, our lineage was founded by Jetsun Kapa, and we have a lot of references to his disciples and his disciples all the way down into the textbook writers of today, basically still commenting on the original scriptures from Jetsun Kapa and his immediate disciples. However, there's a lot of, obviously, references before Jetsun Kapa, right? Everything that Lord Buddha taught, everything from Arya Nagarjuna, everything from the Asanga, and the actual curriculum is composed of a lot of different lineages, and you get a basis of a lot of different things. You study the Abhidharma, you study the Vinaya, you study different traditions and different lineages, and then within our Mahayana tradition, you study the six perfections in the Lam Rim. And it's mostly from ancient sources. Yeah. So Melissa was mentioning, so on this text, it says, let the same ride on the wind. Melissa's verse that she quoted also had this reference of riding on the wind. Let the two ride on the wind. What they're really referring to is a practice of letting the whatever your thoughts, right, of giving and of taking, of tong and len, ride on your wind. So on your on an exhalation, you would be giving love, right? You give people what you want. On your inhalation, you retract that and you bring it back inside and you take. In other words, you with compassion, you take away other people's pain and suffering. So then the question is, remember we talked a little bit about what do we do with it once it's inside of us, right? Is the whole purpose of this just to carry away other people's pain? And have it ripen on ourselves instead of ripening on them?
No.
Right. What do we do with it when it's inside of us?
Transform.
No, we don't transform it.
Zap it.
Right. Exactly. We destroy it. Right. We transform it by destroying it, if you want to say that. But it's a destruction. We're not transforming into something else. We're absolutely eliminating it. And when you exhale, it makes sure all of it's gone and all of the smoke disappears. It's just a point I wanted to reiterate that we're not leaving that substance inside of us. What happens when we put the thoughts on the wind is something very, very profound. And as Melissa said, we can't talk about it in too much detail, but I did want to provide a little bit of more basis for it here. And it's the basis that is that will transform your yoga practice, if you have an asana practice, to be able to put your thoughts on your pranayama while you're doing your asana practice will light a fire under that. Will really bokjimpa your asana practice. So we say there's a very subtle body which exists out, you know, underneath our or within our gross body. We have a gross body, right? And within this gross body, we even have more subtle bodies. Like underneath this skin and bone, we have veins, right, and arteries. Underneath there, we have capillaries. And it gets more and more subtle, right? And within the capillaries, we have different types of blood vessels. Within there, we have different types of blood and different types of oxygen and different types of cell walls. And everything goes down into more and more subtle things. And that's looking at it from a scientific way. In a similar way, we also have a subtle body, which is so subtle we don't observe it. If we were to cut ourselves open, we wouldn't see our subtle body right now. Does it exist? Tell me, does my liver exist right now? Does my heart, do I have a heart right now? Can you see my heart? No, right? Did we know about, did things just come into existence in the 20th century when we discovered the atom and as the building block of physical matter?
No.
Right. Things exist, okay, even though we haven't scientifically proven them. We have a mentality that unless we see it or until we've scientifically proven something, that it's not true, right? And I want to dispel that. Our subtle body exists. We have 72,000 channels within ourselves right now. And I want to open up the possibility for you to consider that it is there, even though you won't see it in Scientific American magazine tomorrow morning, okay? And you have to consider that possibility exists, regardless of whether some scientist has seen it under molecular microscope. This body has these 72,000 channels, right? Within these channels run very special energy, okay? It's the energy which is tapped into with acupuncture needles. It's the energy which gets distributed through Tai Chi, all right, or gathered up through other Qigong practices. So there are other cross-references in Chinese and Indian cultures of awareness of this body and using this energy in our system, right? This energy which flows within our channels is the interface for our mind and our body. Okay, has anyone ever thought about where your thoughts meet your body? Have you ever considered why fear makes your heart go fast? Or why fear makes you sweat? Fear is the thought, right? It's a mental conscious thing, right? How does that thought in your brain affect your sweat glands in your body and make your shirt wet? You know, what's the connection between something ethereal like a thought, which your mind doesn't have a space, right? Your mind can now go to the next room over. It can go to the R train where you're going to go take home tonight. It can go back to work where you were at 12 noon or where you went to lunch. It doesn't have a space. It's irrelevant to the body in many ways. So why does the mind make the body sweat when it has fear? And how does that work? your winds, your subtle winds that that ride in tandem with your thoughts is the interface for your thoughts and your physical body through that subtle layer within the 72,000 channels. Why is this important? We're starting to get to the point of asking ourselves, how does Tonglen work? Can I really take away someone else's pain? What happens when I take away my, you know, grandmother's pain? And what actually happens to it? How does that actually work to transform my world? Your 72,000 channels are constricted right now. The whole reason that we get sick and that we age and we die is because we have mental afflictions like anger, jealousy. We do things like we steal and we lie and we have wrong view. All of those things subtly constrict this body. And it prevents the energy from flowing through those 72,000 channels in a natural way. When that energy is constricted, it's why I have a sore back, right? It's why my knee hurts after 30 minutes. It's why everything is the way it is, right? If I put on those thoughts in my mind, the wish to cherish somebody else, the compassion to take away their pain, the desire to serve them and give them everything they want with pure love, it works to open up those 72,000 channels, okay? Because the thoughts and winds ride in tandem, you can affect those channels by the very thoughts that you bring in. And you can carry them in with the breath. So when it says the two ride in tandem, they're talking about, there's two levels. They're talking not only about giving and taking, but there's a very subtle reference to the notion that the two are thoughts and winds riding in tandem. Okay, so when you read that in the contemplations, understand there's always two references there. Not just giving and taking, but also the tandem pair of riding, the thoughts riding in tandem with your winds. So when you have these beautiful thoughts of compassion and giving, as you open up your channels, you start to feel beautiful. You start to look beautiful, and you start to look younger. There's a reason why people who are so generous and so loving and everything have a radiance and a happiness about them. They're transforming their inner channels because of what the thoughts that they have of generosity throughout the day. Okay? Everybody who has an ulcer and has a heart attack, it's caused by their mental thoughts which are riding on the winds and is causing constrictions in your subtle channels. When you reach a point of total enlightenment, you will have no constrictions in any of your channels. And all of your prana will running through your body will be running flow free of any obstructions, okay? Because you will be free of any mental affliction obstacles. And as you do that, with the reference of like how simply that you can see people who glow because of some of the things they do, you will glow even more to the point you look like a Sambhogakaya being like this because you've opened up your channels, all right? So when I change my subtle body, because of the thoughts that ride in of compassion, on taking, and love on giving, as my channels open up, I change my world, not only on the inside, because I'm opening my channels, but also on the outside. As the channels open up on the inside, they're a great cause for my exposure to what I'm seeing in the outside world. I'll just mention it now. In our worldview, we project that the world outside is coming from within our mind stream. It's a storage of collection of imprints from our past deeds to others, which is, even our inner body is a collection of those past deeds we've done towards others. But as that ripens and projects out into a world of a yellow room here with fans, you know, and cold outside and rain for the last 2 days, that's all something that's manifest from within my mind stream based on my own past karma. And that's coming from within my subtle body as well. So if my exterior world of this piece of paper is even coming from my world, I can also extrapolate that my grandmother's cancer is coming from that same place. I can change things on that interface between the mind and the body through using the breath, because they ride in tandem, to change my outside world. That's how you move from a world of suffering and pain to one of the path on the steps on the path to enlightenment. The culmination of the Lam Rim is the culmination of changing your your inner body to project only pure seeds. Okay? The whole, it's the how a lot of this karma works. It's a lot of how transforming your world can be possible. If you were in a religious tradition that didn't say how to get to enlightenment in some practical way, you would always have a missing key. Okay? The key for us, and you'll learn a lot about it in a lot more detail, and you'll meditate it in a lot more detail when you get to the higher teachings, is that the thoughts and the winds ride in tandem. And because everything is a projection from our subtle body, you will totally transform your world. It's entirely possible. And you're working now with Tonglen in extremely powerful ways. In both open and secret teachings, you're using your coarse breath to change your very subtle energy, which is then affecting your coarse breath. See, it's a very cyclical way of transforming your world.
What else has an effect on the subtle body?
A lot of things. So, like we mentioned mental afflictions, for example. When you have a lot of anger, you're constricting some of your channels. When you have a lot of desire, ignorant desire, you're constricting other sets of channels. Okay. Conversely, when you're residing in beauty, right, and you're reveling in things of beauty, or say another form of beauty is great devotion. Say, you know, we have a lot of guru devotion and lama devotion in our practice. Those types of things totally open up your channel and affect your body in another way. Okay. There are coarse ways to work through your body. Yoga asana practices. You know, what do you think that's doing? You know, it's totally affecting your subtle channels, right? You know, and that's one of the very good reasons to do yoga asana practices. They say working from the outside in, you're affecting your subtle body through simple things like physical posture.
So just in a simple abstract sense, the goal is to remove the blockages from yourself? Or what are you what are you trying to do? If you could paint a picture of it or make it graphic, you're trying to remove the restrictions from it, or you're trying to make it glow, or what are you trying to do?
The glow will happen naturally. The joy and bliss from the experience will happen naturally. You should be working on one thing, well, in a series of steps. Start with reducing the amount of negative things that are done, and that will stop the kind of like the floodwaters of the constrictions which is happening in every day, every breath, every minute that we have a thought. So start to work to reducing and removing the amount of negative things that we think, right? And then do things which are at least then not harming anything with our thoughts, and then we do switch to things which are purely beneficial to everybody else. And we get to this point of Tonglen where we're really putting someone else first, and that gets to the point where you are totally just opening. So the end result is to do things with your thoughts that open up your subtle channels.
Open.
And remove the inherent blockages which we have. And once that's done, the rest will take care of itself. You have the prana within yourself to transform everything.
And you can see the subtle body. Is that the same as the aura? Or not?
I don't know. I don't know what an aura is.
You can't see somebody's subtle body.
I cannot. So... I can't see anyone's subtle body, but other people have very well be able to see other subtle bodies. I would imagine an enlightened being could see a subtle body, right? And other people could very well see a subtle body. And that may come in the form, you know, your subtle channels are within your body, right? I have seen some illustrations of them coming out a little bit, and that might be the manifestation of the subtle body in an outer way to create an aura, but I have never experienced that. I've never seen that, so I can't comment really. So, Eric, just because you've opened up your channels and you're seeing, like, you know, beautiful things all around you, and you look down and you're in no pain and you're feeling young and vibrant and healthy and everything, does that mean Siobhan will see you that way?
I think that it affects whatever you do. Will affect your immediate surroundings. So she's around me all the time, so I would imagine,
she would get a what do they call it, a glow? What do they call it, like a glow effect? from your glow?
She said, "You've had too many glasses of wine. Stop glowing."
Remember we said earlier on that you can't share karma, right? And that's like we can't take, you know, my grandmother's cancer because, you know, it's her mind stream that owns that karma. So Siobhan may see you still as somebody very different than how you see yourself. Because the Eric that you perceive is coming from within inside you, in your mind stream. The Eric that Siobhan experiences is a projection that comes from inside her. You could say there are at least two Erics in that scenario. Okay? So because they're separate Erics in that way, you could be experiencing an Eric very differently than another person experiencing an Eric. Okay? So don't always look for that expression like, well, I didn't see a halo. They're not an enlightened being. You know? Just because you don't experience it doesn't mean they don't experience it themselves or that somebody else doesn't see that about somebody. It's very... I just wanted to go on that because of Gowen's question. So I just... To be clear, you know, understand how karma is working there.
That's a good illustration, thank you.
And so...
But sometimes we think the same thought. I mean, it happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
So I say something that she was saying, or she's saying it, and I'm saying it at the exact same time.
Well, this is the karma expert. She'll tell you all about why that's the case.
Anyway, I don't want to take up time.
I just want to talk about the subtle body. And I think it's important for you to know, it's a little prelude to what we'll talk about next week. So when you hear, once again, these commentaries talking about the two, riding on the tandem, riding on the wind, that's what they're talking about. Okay. There was a beautiful... I was going to read. Maybe I don't have time. There's some lovely cross-references in Tonglen and different scriptures. Here's a shorter one. I was going to read a long one, but I think I'm going to read a longer one later. So I'm going to... There's a shorter one. So it says, "Now I'll put it all together for you. See your breath as it passes out. Give with it dharma, happiness, good, to every mother in the six realms. Then you breathe in, take in every form of being, take in from every being all their bad deeds and their pain. Go thus, deep, give and also take. Lose your heart to this supreme wish. When and wherever you may be, run to your Lama and the Three Jewels. Live in this way, both give and take. What amazing luck that I have found this Dharma. Grant me your blessing, Holy Jewels. Let every Dharma wish come true." I think Melissa's going to talk a little bit about different ways and practices. I think afterwards, towards the end of the class, we're going to talk about different practices of Tonglen. And this was an allusion to it much quicker than on the meditation cushion, how you can do Tonglen in everyday practice, right? While you're standing on the train, while you're waiting in queue at the supermarket and things like that.
So contemplation 9 is, whose suffering do we take? And it says, various types of people have widely varying mental capacities for practice. It even happens that there are some beginners who are unable to practice giving and taking at all. For these kinds of people, you should recall the line that says, the proper order of taking is to start off from yourself. So, you know, Eric, I think you asked this question maybe the first or the second class of who should our object of meditation be? Who should we focus on the giving and taking? And basically, This reading is talking about how there's a wide variety of capacities of practitioners. And, you know, maybe the practitioner of lowest capacity is those that have so little compassion, which is where I feel I fit in. You have such little compassion that you have to work on yourself before you can even begin to thinking of others, right? And so what you do in this example is you would think about yourself and picture yourself like in a future situation or a problem that you anticipate you will have, or maybe it's a reoccurring problem that you have daily. And you picture yourself in that situation with that problem under those afflictions, and you do Tonglen on yourself, right? You make your future self very clear in front of you. You take away the pain very specifically, and then very specifically, you give your future self exactly what you're going to need to deal with that problem in the future. And you can use that as your practice. And slowly, slowly, as you do that daily, you'll work up to the next highest capacity, which is to work on those closest to you. So your partners, your loved ones, your family, your close friends. And then once you get a little more compassion, you can work on, you know, those people around you that maybe aren't so close, but you definitely like them. You know, we walk into a room and you can easily break the room into three types of people: those you like, those you don't like, and those that are just neutral, right? So we start with those people that you like. You do the Tonglen practice with them. Once you get a little bit more strong in your compassion, you can work to those whom you feel neutral about. And then, of course, when you're very strong, you work towards your greatest enemy. You know, you work towards that person that annoys you the most. You work towards that person who pushes your buttons, and you picture them, and you take away their pain, and you give them exactly what they need. Now, I know that many of my friends can start with that highest capacity, you know. They can start taking away the pain and the suffering from those that annoy them. You can also see this, you know, in a bigger, like, universal scope of things where, you know, Buddhism talks about the six realms of existence. Has anybody studied the six realms of existence in this room? There's the wheel of life on the side wall. And so, you know, the two higher realms are the gods and the demigods. And, you know, they have it very good, very long lives, you know, lots of really great stuff. Then there's the humans, the animals, the hungry ghosts, and the hell beings. And it's also possible, you know, even though we don't have proof for these other realms, except the animal realm, you can, you know, maybe give it the benefit of the doubt, and maybe you want to work on taking away the pain of the hell beings. You know, that's also an option. Or, you know, if you're into sci-fi, you can think about all the millions of beings on all the other planets in the universe, and you can picture what they would be like, and you can picture taking away their suffering. So, you know, whose suffering do we take? It depends, number one, upon your capacity, and number two, you know, upon your imagination. Like, do you want to start small with people you don't, with people you know really well? Do you want to work on people who, you know, are neutral, who you don't know very much about them, but maybe that would be a really good practice to, you know, get your compassion working a little bit more? Or do you want to think about these hell beings, you know, who maybe we don't have a grasp that they definitely do exist, but you can only imagine, you know, what it would be like. So that's what Contemplation 9. Mm-hmm.
But just to further my question, it doesn't matter who you pick as long as you do the practice. Because if you said, oh, I did great today because I picked a hell being and I took away some of their pain, or you could say, I just worked on myself today, they're equal, right?
They're totally equal. The only thing that's important in the practice is that feeling, you know, that true willingness to take on someone else's pain. And I can tell you, from my personal experience, having very little compassion, that there are definitely days that I could take someone else as my as my object, but no matter how hard I try, I could not open my heart to really truly have the willingness to take their suffering on. And I think that's the test to see how well you're doing in your meditation. Like, did you really open your heart? Were you really willing to take on that other being's suffering? And you're the only one that knows it. And it's not ever a question. You know exactly if you were able to do it in your meditation.
Mm-hmm. In the first class, I think you said one of the things that you have to picture that there's a higher teacher or a perfect teacher in front of you that can help you. Is that true? I think you said something like that. So if you feel like you're not doing it, then can you ask that perfect being for help?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a perfect thing to do.
I think you remember you saying that in the first class. See the perfect teacher or master in front of you, and you can ask them for mm-hmm. help, or they're guiding you or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the blessing. You ask them for a blessing. Yeah.
Yep. I'm not sure I understand what about taking on their suffering, because part of the practice is destroying their mm-hmm. suffering. So I don't really get that, you know? I mean, I remember when I was reading this, I guess you, Michael, made a point of you're not taking the suffering, you're not putting that on yourself.
Absolutely.
You're destroying it.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
So it's, the willingness to take it on. You have to be 100% willing to take it on. You don't actually take it on. You have to have that willingness. Like, I will do this. Like, I definitely can take their suffering on. I want to take their suffering on. You know, have that willingness. I don't know. I'm probably not describing it very well in words. But you're absolutely right. You don't take it on.
You're like taking it to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're taking it to keep it. Mm-hmm. But just to take it and then get rid of it.
Right, but it seems like the way you're explaining it is almost like a fear of taking it on yourself. When I was reading it, it felt like such such a practice of helping somebody, because I don't have to worry about incorporating that into my own being. I'm just trying to take it and see it, visualize it as he had it as like a lighting a match and a big puff of smoke, it goes up and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So it benefits that person,
mm-hmm.
doesn't harm you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just not sure where you're seeing yourself as a non-compassionate being.
Because I don't always have that willingness. Like, it makes logical sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you're in the midst of some kind of anger, or maybe you're too mixed up in your ego,
mm-hmm.
It makes sense logically, but when you try to do it, you can't. Like, it can logically make sense, but if you have a blockage there, maybe ego, maybe anger, whatever the affliction, it doesn't happen. So, yeah.
So then, it's further to this, in contemplation 10, he talks about how it should feel. And he says you should have some level of fear. It should scare you a little bit. He says at this point, if you feel a touch of fear, it is a good sign. Because it's the degree of which you've created your willingness to, oh my God, I want to take on that person's incredible pain. They're dying and I want to take that on. And if you were to get to the point where you could do it without fooling yourself, like, oh, this doesn't really count, it can't be done, you know, in the back of your head, and still take it on, like, that would be just incredible things. And you should have some fear about taking on someone else's cancer, right? They're dying of it. We have a self-preserving nature. There should be a fear about taking on someone's, like, pain like that. Or extreme heartache, right? Or you see people like with severe depression, and you want to take it on. You're like, oh my God, you wouldn't normally want to go into that state. So, if you do have a little fear, it's good. It's a sign that you've amped up the willingness and the degree with which you're creating this visualization in front of you. One note on that comes up a lot is they say don't use your lama as an object in front of you. So we've talked about ourselves, and Melissa mentioned the future self, different beings close to us, near to us, and far, and all this stuff. But in all of this, you shouldn't take your lama as an object in front of you for taking their pain. Any reason why?
Because you see them as a Buddha, or you should see them as a Buddha, and therefore they shouldn't have any?
Correct. Right. You should, with pure proper guru devotion, see your lama in front of you as a divine being, as an enlightened Buddha, and therefore they don't have any pain to take. You shouldn't see them in a way that anything other than perfect. Yeah, that's 10.
Wow. Okay.
We still have the garden.
So 11, contemplation 11 is what is it that we give? And this is from the Treasure House of Precious Jewels by Nuchu Dharmabhadra. So in this reading, he gives examples of what we can give, what we can imagine is in this bright light that we're pouring over our object of meditation and pouring into our object of meditation. So, I guess these are just more examples that you can think about. You can think about how you can personalize them to you and to your object of meditation and how it can be really meaningful. For your object of meditation. So he says, when you do the practice of giving as you breathe out, think of the quantity of virtue you have in your acts of taking refuge, observing the law of karma and its consequences. Also imagine that you have some immaculate happiness to give, even though at this point we have yet to gain any. Do the act of giving all of these. Focusing on those in the lower realms, see them reaching the higher realms as a result. Next, take the quantity of virtue that you possess from following the path of the three trainings and give it out to those in the higher realms. Imagine that they thereby have achieved freedom. Take finally the quantity of virtue that you have from learning the wish for enlightenment and from following the way of the noble sons and daughters of the Buddha. Imagine that you have given away this virtue to people like the listeners and self-made Buddhas. Imagine, finally, that this helps them reach Buddhahood itself.
Okay. So the last thing we want to talk about before we head into a meditation is a reference in this class to The Garden. Some of you may have seen this book. So this is one of the early books that Gessler wrote, I think, 97, 98. And it's a parable, so it's a very interesting read. This is 2000, it says. So it's a fascinating book, and I encourage everyone to read it. It's a form of the Lam Rim, in a way, as a parable, all the way into reaching total enlightenment. And there's a section about Tonglen and giving and taking in this book. And it's available out here. So I just want to read a little bit, like a half a page from this reference to Tonglen. And in this story, the protagonist questions Master Asanga, how does this work? You know, can I really take away someone else's pain? And Master Asanga has gone through a logical proof of the fact that you cannot take on anyone else's pain in a practical way. Otherwise, all of the enlightened beings around us would have done so already, and we wouldn't be in any pain, right? They would have done it. If there are truly compassionate, pure bodhisattvas out there, they would have taken our pain if they could, okay? It's proof that they can't, the fact that we're still here and suffering. So then he says, 36, yeah. So any questions? And so now tell me, this is Master Asanga speaking, Can you simply, with the power of meditation, take away the sufferings of your mother and fill her with every wish, her ultimate wish, perfect happiness and paradise, taking and giving? And the protagonist says, well, if the Tonglen meditation makes me an enlightened one and gives me the ability to go to her and teach her this path perfectly, then yes, right? Then send her the white light. And Master Asanga rose from the bench. Send the lantern. Send water to those who thirst. Send them a glass of water. Send a companion to those who are alone. Become the companion. Be a lover for those who need a lover. Be a child for those who want a child. Be a tree for those who wish to sit and rest. Be a rose for those who seek beauty. Be all things to all people that bring them any happiness at all. Send them out everything on the white light, out with your breath. Our breath moves in harmony with our spiritual body and changes as a reflection of the health of the spiritual body. The spiritual body, our subtle body, in turn is affected by the breath. And as the mind gains in purity, both the breath and the spiritual body are made whole. You will find thus that as the breath carries the light, it will affect you in ways I cannot reveal to you now. Right? We were talking about this. Devote yourself to this practice of taking and giving. You will find true compassion, but you must practice seriously. Whisper to yourself as you move through the day, giving and taking, giving and taking, giving and taking. Let it be on your mind and be on your lips, constantly like breath itself. You can do this practice anywhere, in the market, as you eat, as you work, as you lie in your bed waiting for sleep. And it will, I tell you, bring you to your paradise, your own garden, where you must go first yourself to enlightenment, if you have any hope of finding and helping your precious mothers. So let's take a short break, maybe 5 minutes. We'll come back at 8:30 for a beautiful meditation, something a little different than the last two classes.
Yeah, it's hard to do that.